Election College, Episode 168, Frederick Douglass, Part 2.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Hey, Ben, this week we've been talking about Frederick Douglass, and we left off last episode with how the fight for freedom for African Americans began to be tied together with the right for women to be able to vote and have rights as citizens as well. One thing as I was researching this, and Ben, I think you came across this too, was just how stern Frederick Douglass looks in the pictures that are taken of him. And that was intentional. I mean, he wasn't an angry person. If anything, Frederick Douglass, in my mind, exemplifies what a Christian would be like. And again, I just feel like his life is so convicting because he overcame odds all throughout his life. And he didn't just whine or gripe about his station in life. He did something about it. And so when you see photographs of Frederick Douglass, which he is probably one of the most, if not the most photographed American of the 19th century, he doesn't smile. And the reason he doesn't smile is because he didn't want to play into that caricature of a happy slave. And he looked right into the camera with this stern look. I don't know. I don't know how he stood so boldly, but he did. I guess he must have figured he had nothing to lose and he had God on his side.
Yeah, that's definitely a motivating factor for him. And as we can read, Douglass gets exposed to a ton of different religious sermons up through his upbringing. And we talked about how he had listened to Sophia Auld read the Bible. He even taught other slaves to read by reading the Bible. And he converts to Christianity. He becomes a pastor later in his life. And it becomes a huge motivating factor for him. I mean, it's an entire part of his life. And really influences a lot of the things he says and does. And you can imagine that if you are of the opinion that God created us all and created us equal, it's, even though our founders did it, it's pretty difficult then to believe that someone should be able to own another person. So, you know, during his visits to the UK in 1846 through 1848, Douglass meets with a bunch of different British Christians and says, "Hey, could you make sure that you never support any of these American churches that permit slavery?" And, you know, of course, they're happy to do that. But he's basically saying, like, Christianity and slavery cannot go together. And it becomes a platform for him to stand on in order to help accomplish a goal he already had.
Yeah. In a seething letter, albeit I say seething, and sometimes you can say, well, there might be some irrational emotional words that could be expressed in a seething letter, but this letter is actually very logical and laid out, well, dare I say, perfectly. He writes a letter to Thomas Auld, who used to own him, and he addresses the issue of Auld not allowing many members of his family to not be able to read. He says, quote, "Your wickedness and cruelty committed in this respect on your fellow creatures are greater than all the stripes you have laid on my back or theirs. It is an outrage upon the soul, a war upon the immortal spirit, and for one you must give an account at the bar of our common Father and Creator."
So all of this that we've been discussing has been taking place before the time of the Civil War. And even before the Civil War, as we've mentioned again several times, Douglass is one of the most famous black men in the country. And, you know, he goes around, he speaks, he is free, he has overcome a lot of things, and he is also in favor of women's rights, which is incredible for a black man to be concerned about women's rights at the time, because black men don't have their own rights. So, you know, it seems like there'd be a better idea to be self-serving, but he was very much of the opinion that if women don't have rights, no one should have rights. And so he actually is a proponent that if this Civil War is going to happen, and part of it is to help end slavery, we African-Americans should be allowed to fight for our freedom. And he publishes that view in his newspaper, and also, you know, giving several speeches about that. And he says, hey, the first battle of Bull Run, there were already some black guys in there. They were in the Confederate ranks. And then a couple weeks later, he's like, these guys had their muskets on their shoulders and bullets in their pockets. So he gets a party with President Abraham Lincoln in 1863 and says, how are we going to treat these black soldiers? Because we pretty much know that they're slaves, and we need to make sure that we're not destroying them. We're not killing them for something that they're being forced to do.
So as most of us know, Lincoln was more in favor of not having slavery expand in his bid for president back in 1860. And as Ben said, Douglas does have an audience with the president during his first term. And by the time 1864 rolls around, Douglas does not support Lincoln for president. He actually puts his endorsement behind John C. Fremont. And the reason being was because Lincoln did not publicly endorse suffrage for black freedmen. And Douglas was of the opinion that since African-American men were fighting for the Union, that they deserved the right to vote. So after the Emancipation Proclamation, the North, of course, was no longer obliged to return slaves back to their owners in the South. And Douglas makes plans with Lincoln during this second term, this albeit very short term. He makes plans with Lincoln to move liberated slaves out of the South. And so Douglas helps the Union by serving as a recruiter for the 54th Massachusetts Infantry Regiment.
And his eldest son, Charles Douglas, joins the 54th Massachusetts Regiment. And Lewis Douglas, another one of his sons, fought at the Battle of Fort Wagner. And then the third son, Frederick Douglas Jr., also served as a recruiter. So they were pretty involved in the Civil War themselves. So after the Civil War is over and Lincoln dies, the ratification of the 13th Amendment outlaws slavery, which is a great step forward. The 14th Amendment makes it so that black men can be citizens and have equal protection under the law, which is a huge step forward. And then the 15th Amendment protects all citizens from being discriminated against voting because of their race, which, of course, again, is a huge step forward. We're still not done. I mean, we've still got a long way to go, but we're getting there. And on April 14th, 1876, Douglas actually gives the keynote address at the Emancipation Memorial in Lincoln Park in Washington. And he pretty much at this point talks about Franklin and just kind of speaks frankly on him. He talks about things he thinks are positive about Lincoln, which is, of course, something you'd want to do at an event like this. And he talks about how things he thought were negative about Lincoln. And he calls him the white man's president. And he doesn't love the fact that Lincoln was late in joining the cause of emancipation. And, well, he really, you know, like Jason said, didn't support that it go away, just that it didn't keep spreading. So the crowd actually gives Douglas a standing ovation. And even Lincoln's widow, Mary Todd Lincoln, which we've talked about quite a bit, gives Douglas Lincoln's favorite walking stick in appreciation for this. And that'd be difficult, kind of. I mean, I think everybody kind of saw the good and bad he was talking about, but for Lincoln's wife to say, hey, that speech you just gave where you did kind of criticize my husband who's dead now, I thought it was pretty good. That was a good speech.
Yeah. Kind of interesting about that memorial, Ben. It's still there in Lincoln Park in Washington, the Emancipation Memorial. It was actually called the Lincoln Memorial until the Lincoln Memorial was built. But it shows Lincoln standing up, and then there's a slave or an African-American kind of kneeling before him. And the funds that were raised for that memorial were raised by African-Americans. But in recent years, it has been perceived to be racist, because it's showing an African-American being subservient to a white man. Kind of interesting. It's still there, yeah. And you can visit it. But after the Civil War, Douglas really goes to bat for not only African-Americans. He is very much continuing his efforts for the equal rights for women. And he does get a couple of appointments, one being the president of the Reconstruction Era Freedmen's Savings Bank. And he also served as a U.S. representative for the Dominican Republic, but he resigned that after some disagreements with the U.S. government policy. Kind of interesting about the United States and the relations, or should I say the colonialization of some of the Caribbean islands. At one time, believe it or not, the United States actually thought about setting up the Dominican Republic, Haiti, I guess you could say Hispaniola, as being areas that African Americans could move to and set up their own government, almost like a black state. I'm sure that probably had something to do with Douglas's disagreement with U.S. policy.
Yeah, I'd say so. While Douglas is doing these things, there's a lot of insurgency arising in the South after the war, and you start getting these secret vigilante groups, such as the Ku Klux Klan, and there are lots of others as well, but this, you know, becomes the one that has the most attraction to it. And, you know, things could take different forms. There was one that called themselves, quote, the military arm of the Democratic Party, end quote. And they would make sure to get rid of Republican office holders and disrupt elections that were happening. And there was a point where Democrats took over the political power in every state that had been part of the Confederacy, and they wanted to make sure that white supremacy reigned high. And they basically said, well, we'll do this by violence, and we'll do it by segregation, and we'll make sure that we disenfranchise these African Americans and put laws into place, because we are, you know, in charge of the government at this point in this area, and we'll make sure that they can't do anything just because of the laws we put in place. And so because of these things happening, Douglas says, well, I'm going to throw my support behind Ulysses S. Grant in 1868 and make sure that, you know, the pro-black man president or candidate for president becomes the president.
Yeah. So U.S. Grant very much stands up to the Klan. He even suspends habeas corpus in South Carolina. He sends troops to many of the southern states. Over 5,000 people were arrested from these groups like the Klan. And Douglas writes of Grant that African Americans will, quote, ever cherish a grateful remembrance of his name, fame, and great services. So you have a big fan of Grant in Frederick Douglass. Just a couple of years later, in 1872, we all remember this because you are astute Election College listeners, Douglass is the vice presidential nominee under Victoria Woodall for the Equal Rights Party ticket. And guess what? he didn't realize this. He didn't campaign for vice president. He never acknowledged that he had, but that's how he can have an excuse to cover Frederick Douglass in election college, right? But he does serve as a presidential elector at large for the state of New York. And in 1872, he did take the state's votes to Washington.
We've talked a lot about Douglass's accomplishments and things like that, but we didn't mention too much of his family life, a little bit. He has five children with Anna. They are Rosetta, Lewis Henry, Frederick Jr., Charles Raymond, and Annie Douglass, who passed away when she was about 10 years old. And Charles and Rosetta actually helped Frederick publish his newspapers and produce them. And Anna, his wife, is a huge supporter of Frederick and still supports his work and him as an individual, even though he had some relationships, some scandals, some affairs with a few women that he was professionally involved with. And after Anna dies in 1882, Douglass marries a couple years later Helen Pitts, who is a white feminist from New York. And she's actually the daughter of an abolitionist colleague and friend of Frederick Douglass. So that, you have to imagine, is incredibly scandalous, because it is, even though it's technically free, it's still the 1880s, and a white woman marrying a black man is almost, I think you could say, unheard of. Not only that, but Pitts is also nearly 20 years younger than Douglass, and her family disowns her, stops speaking to her. His children say, you know what, we don't like this. It's kind of disrespectful to our mother. And Douglass is like, you know what, the first marriage I had was the same color as my mother. The second marriage I have is the same color as my father. And basically he's like, get over it. So Frederick Douglass, even though he did a lot of great stuff, wasn't without faults and wasn't without controversy. But I for one, think it's pretty cool that he married a white woman in the 1880s and was like, I don't care what y'all say, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah. So really the last part of his life, he does run into some financial trouble because, as we all know, in the 1870s, there was an economic crisis. And during this time, the Freedmen's Savings Bank went bankrupt. And his newspaper, his final newspaper, The New Era, it failed. Rutherford B. Hayes was elected president around this time and appointed Douglass as U.S. Marshal for the District of Columbia. And that helped pay the bills. Also, interesting to note that in 1877, Douglass visits Thomas Auld, his former owner. And Auld was on his deathbed, and believe it or not, the two men reconciled. What happened was Amanda Auld, who was Thomas's daughter, she requested the meeting. And she was at one of Douglass's speeches, and she was cheering him on. So Thomas Auld complimented his daughter for reaching out to him, and this helps Douglass get some closure to a very rough, rough beginning as a slave.
In 1881, Douglass publishes the final edition of his autobiography. I think this was about the fourth edition that he had published. And he also gets another political appointment as the Recorder of Deeds for D.C. And he continues going around and doing his speaking engagements and traveling. He not only does that in the United States, he's also going abroad and going crazy places. He takes Helen, his new wife, to England, Ireland, France, Italy, Egypt, and Greece in a matter of just a year or two. And, you know, he becomes known around the world, not only in America and a little bit of Europe, but are just around the world. And at the 1888 Republican National Convention, he becomes the first African-American to receive a vote to be the president of the United States in a major party's roll call vote. And that's quite the accomplishment alone. He, you know, of course, didn't run and didn't win, but he still got a vote. And that's substantial. It's a substantial move forward.
Yeah, and even later on, he is appointed to several positions, notably a minister resident to the Republic of Haiti. And in 1892, up in Baltimore, he constructs rental housing for African Americans, which is still there. It's called Douglas Place. And in 2003, it was listed on the National Register of Historic Places. In February of 1895, after giving a rousing speech at the National Council of Women in Washington, he dies of a massive heart attack or a stroke. They don't know which, but he does pass away in February of 1895. His funeral was held at the Metro African Methodist Episcopal Church, and it was there where he gave many lectures, including his last major speech called The Lesson of the Hour. And he is buried in Rochester, New York, where he lived for 25 years. And his body is at Mount Hope Cemetery, and both of his wives are interred there as well as Susan B. Anthony.
You can imagine that Frederick Douglass's legacy goes on and on and on, and the amount of things he was involved in, the amount of things that are named after him. He's just was a very prolific man and had a lot of writings and things like that. And so he's definitely a household name, or at least should be at this point in history, just because of all the things he overcame and the things that he helped promote for others in the similar situations as him. You can find him, of course, in a number of different representations across all sorts of arts and movies and plays and things like that, novels. If you haven't read about Frederick Douglass and you want to know more than what we've discussed, because of course we can't talk about everything about the man, you really should check out some other stuff. And a quick Google search will show you a lot of things even to explore a little further. So what an amazing man.
Yeah. One other little tidbit of trivia, which I think is fascinating, and I don't recall hearing about this, but just this past October, 2016, the Council of the District of Columbia voted that should D.C. become a state, the D.C. would no longer be District of Columbia. It would stand for Douglas Commonwealth. Fascinating little bit of that recent trivia there for you.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're interested in helping support the podcast, there is an opportunity now to support us on Patreon. You can head over to electioncollege.com/Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. When you head over there, you can find out how you can help support the podcast and keep great content coming in your podcast feed.
And of course, we love it when you leave us a review. It doesn't take long at all. And we would love to see like 5 stars and maybe a really nice review. I mean, that's not a whole lot to ask, right? I hope it's not. You can do that by going to electioncollege.com/iTunes or /review, whatever floats your boat more. It really does help us out, and we really do appreciate that. And as Jason always says, we do the happy dance.
Yeah, exactly. And don't forget, you can interact with us each and every day over on one of our social media sites at Election College on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.